Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, September 19, 2016. The UN mission in South Sudan denies accusations that UN camps are housing armed men opposed to the government.
The mission continues to conduct regular cordon and search operations in all of our POC sites across the country. And this is in keeping with the arms-free policy. And we also have clear entry and exit procedures.
And the number of South Sudanese refugees reaches 1 million mark.
New arrivals are telling our colleagues in neighboring country that they've fled, you know, violence, they have fled sexual assault and broad, you know, array of crime and human rights violation.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan denies allegations by SPLA spokesman that some of the armed men causing insecurity around Juba are hiding in the UN camps sheltering internal displaced persons. UNMISS spokesperson insists that peacekeepers are working with the government to end violence in the capital. Tito Justin has this report for VOA from Juba.
Reports of fighting around Juba have increased in recent weeks. Earlier this month, one policeman was shot dead and other officers were injured by unknown gunmen when they clashed around Juba's Jebel neighborhood. Residents also reported hearing sporadic gunshots at the Jebel checkpoint. SPLA spokesman Lul Rai Kong accused the UNMISS last week of harboring gunmen in its protection of civilian sites in Juba. But UNMISS acting spokesperson Santel Passad says she doesn't know where the gunmen are staying.
At this point, they are around the vicinity of the protection of civilian sites. Specific location? No, we can't be sure. The mission rejects the allegations of impropriety in our operations. And in keeping with the UN mandate on protection of civilians and the impartial nature of our actions.
Passad confirms reports of clashes at a checkpoint in the Jebel on the Juba Yei Road. She said last Friday at approximately 6 o'clock in the morning, gunshots could be heard coming from the vicinity of a checkpoint northwest of the protection site. She said UNMISS deployed a quick reaction force to prevent the perpetrators from entering the POC site. Passad added that the attackers later withdrew and the SPLA forces were deployed to secure the area. She says after the fighting in July, UNMISS tightened security on its bases to restrict all arms movement in the camps.
So the mission continued to conduct regular cordon and search operations in all of our POC sites across the country. And this is in keeping with the arms-free policy. And we also have clear entry and exit procedures. And since the July clashes, the search operations have been increased significantly in the Juba POC site. And these operations have yielded positive results.
Passad says UNMISS works with government forces to prevent an escalation of violence in the country.
And we do continue to coordinate proactively with those at the checkpoint in order to deter and prevent any future insecurity.
The relationship between South Sudan government and UNMISS has been rocky. Several senior government officials have gone on record accusing the United Nations mission in South Sudan for being impartial. A UN convoy transporting arms to the former United States was blocked and searched by South Sudan security operatives in 2013. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
The UN Refugee Agency says the number of South Sudanese sheltering in neighboring countries has reached the 1 million mark. A UNHCR spokesperson says more than 11,000 people from Nuer community crossed into Ethiopia's Gambela region and 20,000 others fled to Uganda this past week. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
UNHCR spokesman in South Sudan, Rocco Nuri, says the violence in South Sudan has made women and children in particular more vulnerable to abuse, forcing many of them to flee into neighboring countries. He says Most South Sudanese cross into Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, the Democratic Republic of Congo, or Central African Republic.
Mostly are women and children. New arrivals are telling our colleagues in neighboring country that they have fled, you know, violence, they have fled sexual assault and broad, you know, array of crime and human rights violation.
Nuri says many South Sudanese children have been separated from their parents, and there are disabled and elderly people in need of urgent medical care. With more than a million of its people living as refugees, South Sudan has now joined Somalia, Afghanistan, and Syria as countries that have produced millions of refugees across the world. The latest outbreak of violence in the capital, Juba, between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar in July did not help the matter. Nearly 300 people were killed and thousands more fled the countries because of the violence in part of the former Central Equatoria state and Lier. Nuri says the refugees sheltering in South Sudan also lack food and other basic needs.
This means that those 10,000 refugees from the Democratic Republic of Congo, Sudan and Central African Republic have not received their monthly food ration since late June. The situation is, you know, very, very dire. We are in touch with them over the phone. We keep meeting their refugee leaders and NEA, and they are telling our staff on the ground that there is lack of food, there is lack of medicine.
Nuri says Uganda hosts the highest number of the South Sudanese refugees, with more than 373,000 who arrived after the July violence. UNHCR says more than 11,000 people crossed into Gambela, Ethiopia during the past week, bringing the number of South Sudanese refugees in Ethiopia to more than 292,000. UNHCR says most of the South Sudanese refugees came from Nasir, Maban, Matiang and Mayot in Upper Nile. The refugees cited insecurity and fears of more fighting in their villages. Nuri called on donors to provide more funds to UNHCR so it can meet the needs of the South Sudanese refugees.
At the moment, our budget is funded only 20%, meaning that we need so much funds to respond to the need of refugees in the neighboring country.
Nuri is asking the donor community not to forget the South Sudanese, who, he says, are in desperate need of help. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
The South Sudanese government says it has completed withdrawing its forces from the border with Sudan, as stipulated in the 2012 cooperation agreement between Sudan and South Sudan. Sudan's ambassador to South Sudan says he's not aware of SPLA soldiers withdrawing from the border. Waki Simon Wudu has the details from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
Soldiers from Sudan and South Sudan were supposed to withdraw from the 1956 borderline between what was and then Southern Sudan and Northern Sudan under the agreement. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says the two countries agreed to withdraw their forces from the borderline following a recent visit to Khartoum by South Sudan First Vice President Taban Dengai.
The government of South Sudan has completed its withdrawal from the central line, and it is now outside the central line, within outside the buffer zone. The government of Sudan also has also done the same, and as such, we are in the process of normalizing our relations with the government of Sudan.
The center line is a space defined in the cooperation agreement from which the two countries' forces were expected to withdraw 10 kilometers backwards from the SEAT border in order to create a buffer zone. The two countries share a long-contested and demarcated border which in recent years has become another flashpoint between South Sudan and Sudan. Relations between the two countries soured following clashes between their respective armies in the Higelich oil fields shortly after South Sudan declared its independence in 2011. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe says during the August 21st visit by First Vice President Taban Dengai to Khartoum, the two countries agreed to mutually finalize implementation of the agreement.
It is expected that the technical committee will be arriving here on the 27th for continuation of the talks in the implementation of the in the operationalization of the provisions of the cooperation agreement by the JPSM.
JPSM refers to the Joint Political and Security Mechanism. But the Sudanese ambassador to Juba, Osama Berry, says he is not aware of any withdrawal of SPLA troops from the center line.
No, in fact, unfortunately, I'm not aware about this development from the South Sudanese movement. All that is from the Sudan side. The redeployment has already took place since about June. Yeah, but I have no idea about the redeployment of the South Sudanese army.
The agreement between Sudan and South Sudan contains 9 issues affecting the border, security, oil, citizenship, and division of debts and assets. It was intended to resolve outstanding issues that Juba and Khartoum failed to resolve in the 2005 Comprehensive Peace Agreement. 4 years after the agreement was signed, sticky issues have yet to be implemented. For example, the disputes over oil revenue sharing have not been fully implemented, and a border issue which would have seen a clear demarcation of the two countries' border in 3 months' time from the signing of the 2012 agreement is yet to be implemented. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, United Nations General Assembly opens in New York this week. We will get a preview of the issues when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the biggest problem facing your country's leaders?
Their lack of commitment, you know, commitment in the sense to solving or addressing the issues affecting the country's development. So, you know, if they are committed, they will be able to solve, to identify certain problems and solve those problems appropriately.
I think the very first is a policy somersault and the lack of vision.
Leaders do not have programs for the country. Leaders, they don't put country as a priority. So that's why leaders are not willing to help or to come up with the programs that can at least put resources in the hands of the citizens.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. This week, South Sudan's first Vice President, Taban Dengaye, joins political leaders gathered in New York for the annual UN General Assembly meetings. VOA's Margaret Bashar reports that the war in Syria and the refugee crisis it has created are expected to dominate the agenda.
Across the planet, there is a staggering 65 million displaced persons. They are on the move because of conflict, natural disasters, or extreme poverty. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will convene a summit about their plight on Monday with the aim of addressing the root causes and agreeing a global framework on sharing responsibility for migrants and refugees.
More countries must resettle more people who have been forced from their homes. More countries must recognize the benefits of migration, and everyone, everywhere, must stand up against the animosity that so many refugees, migrants, and minority communities face.
U.S. President Barack Obama will co-host a leaders' summit on Tuesday that will see concrete commitments from governments on funding to assist refugees and expanded opportunities for them to work and go to school. U.S. Ambassador Samantha Power said the summit, in part, is about building important international coalitions.
We are not going to solve the refugee crisis on Tuesday, but I think you will see an important show of political will from leaders around the world.
The majority of refugees currently come from Syria, where nearly 6 years of war has displaced half the population. Leaders recognize that the exodus will not stop until peace and security are restored. A nearly week-old deal between Russia and the United States to reduce the violence and get aid in is still a work in progress. Its success or failure is likely to be a large part of discussions in New York, where there will be a high-level meeting of the Security Council on Syria and the possibility of a meeting of ministers from the International Syria Support Group. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
A recent World Bank report says 65 million people are forcefully displaced, and most of them live in developing countries, including South Sudan. The report says low to middle income countries host about 89% of refugees and 99% of world's internal displaced people. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Xavier DeVictor, an advisor on the Tragedy, Conflict, and Violence Group at the World Bank, says the same 10 conflicts in the last two decades have produced most of the world's refugee and migrant populations.
You're talking about Afghanistan, who has been, you know, in a situation of conflict or deep instability since 1979. You're talking about Somalia, who's been also in a in a difficult situation since 1993. You're talking about Sudan and South Sudan, where there's been, you know, on and off violence for several decades.
The good news for host countries, according to DeVictor, is that refugees typically do not have a large social or economic impact on the national level in their host countries because they represent only a fraction of the total population. In most cases, refugees account for less than 1% of the host country's population. Still, DeVictor says, the large movement of people this past year has fueled xenophobic reactions, which can lead to prejudice and hostility at minority groups from residents. He says while there is little impact on the national level, local communities typically have to learn to adjust to an influx of refugees.
The impact in the regions where these people live can obviously be much larger. This can have positive elements as well as negative elements, right? So when you have a large number of additional people, it creates additional demand, which in itself can generate more jobs. But at the same time, obviously, you have more people who can take these jobs. So the net effect is a gain for some people in the hosting community and a loss for others.
About 15 countries have consistently hosted the majority of refugees. Syria's neighbors, Turkey, Lebanon, and Jordan, hosted 27% of the world's refugee population, while Pakistan and Iran, both of which are neighbors to Afghanistan, hosted 16%. Refugees from South Sudan and Somalia make up 7% of the world's forcibly displaced population, and most live in Ethiopia and Kenya. DeVictor says that although there has been a surge of displaced individuals in recent months, it is important for officials to understand that displacement happens gradually and typically takes years before it becomes a crisis.
You know, forced displacement does not rarely happens overnight. Forced displacement is a dynamic phenomenon that takes several years to reach its peak. And in the report, we find that it takes about 4 years from the first forced displacement, from the first time people flee conflict and violence, to the point that their numbers reach its peak.
DeVictor says both government and aid agency officials can build schools and clinics and also come up with plans to ensure that internally displaced persons have access to basic services in host countries. 94% of the forcibly displaced live in camps, and about half of all refugees have been living in exile for less than 4 years. DeVictor gives host countries a heads up.
That means that for host countries, there's probably some time to prepare to make some contingency plans and to be ready to host these people and to minimize the shock on host communities.
The World Bank says the forced displacement crisis needs a global and comprehensive response, one that ensures that refugees and IDPs are not dependent on aid for extended periods of time and helps refugees integrate into society. The bank says economic integration, such as skills and language training, could help people who are forcibly displaced enter the labor force of a host country and begin to provide for themselves and their families. For VOA News, I'm Ian Bior in Washington.
Most immigrants to the United States live in large cities, but many prefer smaller communities that offer a slower pace and proximity to rural scenery. One such place is Huntsville, Texas, where a community of close to 300 Africans now live. As VOA's Craig Flakers reports from Huntsville, Texas, jobs at nearby prisons is what drew many of them to the city of less than 40,000 people.
Many of Huntsville's Africans can be found at the Rima International Church on Sundays to hear Pastor John Okerube's fervent sermon.
Our God is a covenant-keeping God.
Pastor John says most members of the flock are Nigerians like him, but not all.
Being an African church, it serves as a meeting point to every African that comes down to Huntsville.
The church welcomes all who want to worship and celebrate. Ghanaian Peter Nyanor likes to wear traditional garb from his homeland.
Sunday has been a day that we use to remind ourselves that we still have a rich culture back home. Seeing your fellow people putting on the attire, it reminds you where you come from.
The church also lends a hand to newcomers who need support to get settled.
Everyone that comes that needs help, we try as much as possible. Within our limited resources, we help them out.
But the African population's growth is not from immigration alone. Many of the future leaders of Huntsville's African community are already here. Huntsville, a little over 100 kilometers north of Houston, is the location of the home and gravesite of Texas hero Sam Houston. Sam Houston State University, with its diverse mix of students, and the headquarters of the Texas Criminal Justice Department, which operates nearby prisons. Job opportunities in prisons have drawn Africans to Huntsville. Most of the Sunday congregants are prison guards, including the women.
When you're in the workplace, your co-worker is the family you have at that point, because if anything goes wrong, he or she will come to your rescue.
She says many American co-workers, including African Americans, are curious about her culture.
I've had certain co-workers who will come to me, "Oh, I want to learn Igbo. Can you teach me how to speak Igbo?" And I'll be like, "Sure, I can."
There are enough Africans here to support a small store with products from the home continent. Next door, Pastor John visits T-shirt shop owner Nathan Smith, a fellow Christian who has become a good friend.
I've met people from Africa before, but I've never witnessed an African church before. And I've been over there and experienced their service, and they're real humble and real down to earth, and they worship and they love God.
Pastor John says he's encouraged integration with the larger community in Huntsville, something residents like Kathy have welcomed.
I think it's great. I love diversity. I think it's wonderful.
Pastor John and his church have supported local charities and events, building a sense of belonging for African immigrants within the community at large. Greg Flakes, VOA News, Huntsville, Texas.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. UNMISS flatly denies charges by SPLA spokesman Brigadier General Lul Roy Kwong that some armed men committing the looting and killing in Juba recently have been hiding in UN camps that shelter internally displaced persons. Earlier this month, one policeman was shot dead and other officers were injured by unknown gunmen when they clashed around Juba's Jebel neighborhood. Residents also reported hearing sporadic gunshots at the Jebel checkpoint. UNMISS acting spokesperson Chantel Persaud says she doesn't know where the gunmen are hiding, but it is not in the UN camps. Persaud says it is true that some are in the vicinity of the UN Protection of Civilian Site, but are not inside the camp itself. Persaud confirms that last Friday, gunshots were fired near the UN camp in Juba, but she says UNMISS deployed a quick reaction force to prevent the gunmen from entering the POC site. UNHCR says more than 1 million South Sudanese refugees are now seeking shelter in neighboring countries. A UNHCR spokesperson says more than 11,000 people, most of them from the Nuer community, crossed into Ethiopia's Gambela region, and some 20,000 fled to Uganda this past week alone. UNHCR in South Sudan spokesman Rocco Nuri says the fighting has made women and children particularly vulnerable to abuse, forcing many of them to flee their homes. Nuri says most South Sudanese cross into Uganda, Ethiopia, Kenya, the Democratic Republic of Congo, or Central African Republic. He says many South Sudanese children have been separated from their parents, and thousands of disabled and elderly people from South Sudan are in need of urgent medical care. With more than 1 million of its people now living as refugees, South Sudan has joined Somalia, Afghanistan, and Syria as countries that have produced millions of refugees worldwide. The wave of fighting in July forced the refugee count to go even higher. And finally, South Sudan says it has withdrawn its forces from the border with Sudan per the 2012 cooperation agreement between the two countries. But Sudan's ambassador to Juba says he has not seen evidence to prove that is true. Soldiers from Sudan and South Sudan were supposed to withdraw from the 1956 borderline between what was then Southern Sudan and Northern Sudan under the agreement. South Sudan Information Minister Michael McQuay says the two countries have agreed to withdraw their forces from the border following a recent visit to Khartoum by South Sudan First Vice President Taban Dengai. The center line is a space defined in the cooperation agreement from which the two countries' forces were expected to withdraw 10 kilometers backwards from the shared border in order to create a buffer zone. The two countries share a long-contested, undemarcated border, which in recent years has become another flashpoint between South Sudan and Sudan. Relations between the two countries soured recently following clashes between their respective armies in the Heglige oil fields shortly after South Sudan declared its independence in 2011. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Dial Ping by Vivian. We've been listening to Vivian with the song Ping Dal. She was singing in her Cholo native language. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope you join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.